All right, so just going on with the order, let us introduce the guest speaker. So today we have James Rogowski, and he has a, he's going to talk about it up here, but it's the Declaration of Demands, and you can find that by just going to declarationofdemands.com or his Substack site, which is jamesrogowski.substack.com. He's a writer and an activist, obviously, and I was reading his declaration earlier today, and I'm really excited to hear him talk about this this very subject. I've been feeling this deep inside myself for a long time. So without anything further, please give a nice warm welcome for James.
Thank you, everybody. Hope you can hear me good. Okay. Tiny little bit about myself and how I got here. March 28th, I discovered a document that was the Biden administration's attempted proposed amendments to the international health regulations. And I started writing about it. I wrote a couple of articles, spread the word as far and wide as I could, got on some alternative media programs. And long story short, it caught fire a little bit in the sense that people learned about it, spoke about it, spread the word. And in May, when the World Health Organization had their World Health Assembly, the proposals were just kicked to the curb. And it was actually an enormous victory, not necessarily for me. You know, I think I lit the fuse. I think somebody used the term Paul Revere. Okay, you know, hey, look at this, look at this, look at this. You know, something's going on. And so I'm back again with more about the WHO. I'm certainly going to talk about the Declaration of Demands. But they're at it again. And so if you go to stopthewho.com, you'll see that now they're actually negotiating two separate attempts to change international law. So stopthewho.com. They are coming back again, and this time it is super secret. They haven't even published the document that they're going to be proposing. They have a whole new track where they're proposing amendments to international health regulations. Have no idea where that's going to go, but the deadline for our delegates from the United States to submit those proposals is the end of this month, on the 30th. Okay? On a track that a lot of people talked about back in April and May, but they were actually a little bit off the target. On July 13th, the WHO actually did publish their rough draft of a pandemic treaty. And what they're trying to do is get 194 nations to agree on a whole, you know, new international agreement, a treaty. They refer to it not as a treaty, but they call it either agreement, convention, or an international instrument. And that's just because that's the terminology that they have in their constitution. Most people call it a treaty. So they put that publicly on their website on the 13th of July. I did an article about that. I encourage people to look into that. The summary of everything that they're doing is they want more compliance, more surveillance, more governance, and quite frankly, more money. And so the WHO is now going on two separate tracks. They're talking a little bit more about the pandemic treaty, which I think is actually really a distraction because it's likely that the amendments are going to happen more rapidly. Now, what they did on Friday, today's Sunday, so 2 days ago, they put out a section, a couple of paragraphs on their website, and this is how they operate. They don't have a big press release. They don't have a news broadcast. They changed a page on their website, and they said, everyone starting this coming Friday till Tuesday, so from the 9th until the 13th, people will be able to submit 90-second videos. Whatever it is you want to say to the WHO, you take your phone, you talk for 90 seconds, and you send it to them along with a written transcript. So that's all on stopthewho.com. You can get all that information. But then what they're going to do is they're going to basically choose which ones they want to display. It's not like everybody gets a chance to speak and you hear everybody's opinion. You get to submit your videos. They're going to compile them into two compilation videos with about 120 people each. And they'll present those at the end of the month on the 29th and the 30th when they're having one of their meetings. So if you just step back and think about that, 240 people in the entire world are going to be compressed into those two videos, and that's what they think public comment means. Okay, so I'm on a rampage, you know, since Friday morning of spreading the word about this. Anybody who's got a video camera on your phone or whatever, you don't have to stop at 90 seconds. You can go for 90 minutes, 90 hours, 90 days if you want. Say whatever it is you want to say. They thought that they were going to be able to control the video stream. And what I'm hoping to accomplish is to encourage everybody. You know, if you set up something here next Sunday, if there's some people with a video camera, you got a microphone, have people do their little 90-second things, right? Whatever, you can do it off to the side whenever. Send it off to the WHO, let them know what you think. But more importantly, say whatever it is you want to say for as long as you want to say, and spread it all over social media and invite all your friends to do the same thing. So hopefully there will be a flood of that type of video content to just bury the propaganda that they're trying to do. And if anybody's into Twitter and that sort of things and hashtags, the hashtag I'm promoting is hashtag screw the WHO. Okay? So we'll go with that. Now, the Declaration of Demands is an outcrop of what happened months ago. And I encourage everybody, if there's a copy laying around, please take a look through it. I'm hoping that you have some questions. I'm not going to go through it word for word, but there's a lot of content there. And there's many things. The more questions, the merrier, as far as I'm concerned. I'll go through some of the things, but if there are specific topics, I'd much rather address people's questions than me just drone on about something that everybody can read. All right. So what happened back in the end of March, when I was doing all this research on the proposed pandemic treaty, something kicked in that is, I guess, just the way I was raised, which is it's okay to complain. But it's better if you actually have an alternative. And you go, look, this isn't any good, but maybe you should do this. And so as soon as I published this article months ago about the pandemic treaty, I wrote and published my alternative, or it was basically like, if you guys are going to try to take over the world with a pandemic treaty, here's what the people would have to say. And I called it the People's Treaty. So you can see what that was if you go to thepeoplestreaty.com. That is a simplified version of what's in here. Everything that was in the People's Treaty is in the Declaration of Demands. But essentially what this is, partly, is the WHO is trying to take over the world. They're trying to change international law so that they have more authority. And they're now saying to us, well, we want you to tell us, you know, what we should do. And it's really a trap, because what they're really doing is tricking people into saying, well, yeah, we want you to be in charge, and when you're in charge, we want you to do this, okay? But the proper answer is go away, right? Screw the WHO, leave the WHO, defund the WHO, abolish the WHO. The last thing we need is some bureaucrat in Geneva telling us what we should be talking to our doctor or healthcare practitioner or whatever about what it is that we need to do to be healthy, okay? But that's not how they see it. They have a concept called One Health, where One Health doesn't mean what you think it means. And there's actually bills in Congress where our wonderful senator has co-sponsored a bill, a One Health bill in the United States Senate, that brings in the Department of Defense and the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of this and the Department of that. And their whole idea is they want a all of government, all of society controlling approach to health. And it's not just human health, but animal health, both wild health, domestic health, pet health, plant health, agricultural health. They pretty much want to control everything. And so when the pandemic treaty on July 13th finally was published, it's a 19-page document that if you need a sedative, go print it out and read one page a night. You'll be good for almost 3 weeks. It's a bunch of nothing unless you realize that what it really says in a couple of lines, and this is what they do, they hide it. I'm not a military guy, but there's a phrase, chaff, where if a jet fighter is trying to distract radar, they'll drop all kinds of metallic items so that the radar gives false signals. That's what they do with all their words. They publish all kinds of words, all kinds of videos, all kinds of stuff to just, you know, put you to sleep. But somewhere in the middle of that five-hour video, they'll tell you exactly how they're going to screw you, okay? And then afterwards, they go, well, we told you. Why didn't you say anything, okay? So when I see something like that, I feel obligated to say something. And so what ended up happening was I got inspired at one point, and I went looking, and I found a spoken version of the Declaration of Independence. So go on YouTube or go wherever, and it's only like a 10-minute video. You know, get the document, read the Declaration of Independence, listen to it. It's kind of good to get the audio visual. It's a list of grievances. They're basically, you know, King George is doing this and King George is doing that, and he's taxing us and he's treating us bad, and we've had it and we're leaving, right? Screw the crown, screw the, you know, kingdom. We're starting our own country. Well, I'm not advocating that we start our own country again. I'm advocating that we try to clean up the one that we have. And so in the Declaration of Demands, you can see, and I make no bones about it, I plagiarized the Declaration of Independence quite obviously, but modernized it. And so I believe that, you know, they realized that there would come a time where things would go downhill and we would have to do something very similar again. And so this is my current day version of that. There's some core principles that, if you disagree, you know, let me know now, but look it over if you can, and speak now or forever hold your peace. Section number 2 are fundamental inalienable rights. Number 3 are things that are not just specific to the United States, but every nation on earth most likely would agree with those same demands. And in a perfect world, people around the world and other nations would take this as a template and make demands for their own nation as to what they would want to do. But the meat and potatoes on this is the last page, and it's 22 demands of Congress. Okay. And so if I know I didn't bring enough, I only have 7 of them, but there are 22 demands where we're probably going to have an election in November. I know people question whether or not it's going to happen. How those votes get counted and who gets put, you know, selected to be in those positions after November 8th and come January 3rd. This is kind of like a job description. I think that as Americans, we need to realize that these jokers work for us. They're not our leaders. They are our paid public servants. And if we don't start behaving like their employers and making it known that we have demands of them, then they're going to listen to their donors, they're going to listen to the lobbyists, they're going to listen to the people that have their ear, unless we start really speaking up loudly. Now, today is, I forget now, is it the 4th or the 5th? I'm losing track. It's the 4th. Okay. On September 4th, for the 5th time, and this is number 1 on the demands for Congress, Congress broke the law. They are actually legally obligated every 6 months to vote on a joint resolution to end the COVID emergency. That's just how national emergencies are structured. The president says, hey, we have a problem. And in March, and they retroactively did it to March 1st back in 2020, Trump declared an emergency. A year later, Biden renewed it for a year. A year after that, he renewed it again. And so there have been 5 6-month periods. We're 2.5 years in now. And each of those 6-month periods, Congress was obligated to vote on a joint resolution to either end or give their permission to continue the emergency. And they've just failed miserably, and as far as I'm concerned, every last one of them should be fired because their job is to represent our wishes. Now, if they had gone through the, you know, the charade of doing it and voted to keep it going, arguably, all right, you know, people wanted it. But they're not even doing that. They're just absolutely miserably failing to do the most fundamental thing, which is listen to the people and do what the people tell them to do. Okay? And so I'm actually going to stop there because there are so many things that we can talk about. I can certainly go down this one by one by one. But if anybody has any specific questions about the demands that are on here, what I'm hoping is that people look at what's on here. There's 22 specific for Congress. There may be some that you do or you don't, you know, think are the most important things on the planet. But whatever the heck it may be, I think in general we're probably going to find agreement on most of them. And this is my attempt to get everybody together and saying, look, you know, this is a 3-page document, right? I know I didn't make enough copies, my apologies, but go online to declarationofdemands.com. You can share the link. You can share the PDF digitally. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 15. Declarationofdemands.com. If 10 people tell 50 people, okay, you're at 500. If it goes one more level, you're into the thousands. A couple of more levels removed, and this could spread all over the place because I've tried to make it simple. Just tell people to go to declarationofdemands.com. There are audio-video summaries of each section, so you can just sit there and watch and learn what it's all about, and share a PDF or a 3-page printed piece of paper, and get people talking about it. Now, on the site, right when you get there, there's a big red rectangle that you click on it, and there's a pre-written email that you can just type in your zip code and your name and information, and it will send an email to every single congressperson. So with one click, you can send this information to every congressperson. And then if you go to the spot that says make a voice call, it makes it very easy for you to just click on every congressperson and senator, and their phone number pops up. And if you do it after 5 o'clock, Washington time, you can just leave them all a message. And you can just go, hey, what's your position on the Declaration of Demands? And then you can say, you know, I'm very concerned about demand number 15 or demand number 7. I want you to reply to me as to what your position is on that, because that's what we demand of you. Now, if you don't get any satisfaction from your incumbent, find out who's running against them and let them know about this and let them know that you're not happy with your incumbent congressperson or senator's position and ask them to push the issue. I think there's a lot of stuff here that we can all agree on. If you all want to disagree about one of them, that'd be great too. But I could go on for days and hours about this. Does anybody have any questions? Right, here we go.
Before we get into the demands,
sure.
I was wondering if you could get into a little bit about the disinformation and misinformation campaign from the WHO.
From the WHO? Okay. I don't think they really do much in the way of true information. The WHO is really, in my opinion, they're more about hypnosis. Okay, the main I refer to Tedros Ghebreyesus, who's the I refer to him as the dictator general of the World Hypnosis Organization, because what I think they really do, if you read their constitution, if you read there's one additional law that they put together, which is the framework convention framework on tobacco control. That was agreed upon in 2003, I believe. And then they also have the world, the international health regulations. There is a small area where they actually have a certain amount of authority, all right? Not so much that they have authority, but nations are obligated under those agreements to report, like, if something was going on in the United States that was truly contagious and was potentially something that could spread beyond our borders, we are obligated as a nation amongst nations of the world to tell the WHO that we have a problem, okay? We're obligated to, you know, keep records of, you know, various things that are going on in the country and report that to their database. But beyond that, the WHO, for the most part, under Article 23, makes recommendations. And so what has happened is the media has misrepresented those recommendations. And it starts out with something like, well, the WHO recommended this and the WHO recommended that. And then it's like, well, the WHO said, and then the WHO, you know, the WHO's guidelines and the WHO, all kinds of language. And pretty soon people are quoting the WHO as its, you know, chapter and verse gospel tablets that came down from the mountain, right? We have to do this because of the WHO, right? My girlfriend ordered something online a month or so ago, and we got the tracking email. And it was something that wasn't going to be delivered to the house. We had to go pick it up at a local delivery point. And she goes, come here, look at this. And it had things in there about, you know, you don't have to wear a mask when you go to pick up your thing, but, you know, here are the WHO's guidelines. And she knew it would get me, right? So I'm like, oh, man, let me take a screenshot of that and spread that all around. You know, your neighbor or your in-law or your friend or your work buddy, they all are free to make recommendations, and their recommendations hold about as much weight as the WHO's do. If it makes sense and you think, hey, Bob, that was a great idea. You know, I went and I did that, and it really worked. Thank you so very much for your wonderful recommendation, but you didn't have to, okay? What they want it to be is that you have to. They want to have the authority. That's if they had all the authority they needed, they wouldn't be negotiating amendments to the regulations, and they wouldn't be negotiating for a whole brand new treaty. And if you read the fine print, it basically says, it doesn't say exactly this, it doesn't say of course, but it says something like, pretty much that. Of course, the governance of the treaty would fall under the auspices of the WHO. So, you know, nice language, which basically says they get to be the king. And that's what they're looking for. And as long as we're asleep at the wheel and not looking at this and speaking out about it, our delegates, who most people have no idea who the hell they are negotiating right now. And so, come October 1st, one of the things I'm going to be doing, and if anybody knows anybody who would want to help, once the deadline of the 15th passes for the proposals for the treaty, and then when the 30th passes for the proposals for the amendments, it's going to be Freedom of Information Act request time. Hey, can we see whatever you guys proposed? We want to know what you said in our name. We didn't give you authority to give proposals to the WHO to give away our sovereignty. What did you guys just do? Would really like to know. So stay tuned for that. I hope I answered your question. Oh, misinformation. That's what it was.
Yeah, I just wanted to let everybody know, if you go to that website that's on our card, you will find, if you look at the Sunday meeting post on People's Rights Newsroom, you'll find James's links to the list of demands and his other websites. Just wanted to let you know that.
Okay, everybody, it's time for questions. So I just want to lay a few ground rules down that we want to be respectful to our speaker. And please keep your question to just that and get it out relatively quickly. And, okay, who would like to start?
And if you guys don't ask questions, then I'm going to ask you questions.
John Cacera here. You talked about having an instant button push to go to Congress.
Yes.
That's House and Senate?
Correct.
What about media?
Media's tougher. I don't have a push button something for that. That's something that's certainly should be developed. And when you say media, I have some stories about the media. I'll certainly go down those rabbit holes.
Well, I'm referring to positive media that are absolutely more on the MAGA side.
Yeah.
From Bannon, Jack Posobiec, a couple others, Dr. Wolf. They're all fighting on this Dr. Malone's program.
Yep. I've done a decent amount of that. I have a list of folks that I've gotten connected to. I've reached out. I reach out to them all the time. I've gotten some callbacks for this coming week, you know, that some things may be going on. But what it really comes down to is each and every one of us can and should be pointing and sending whatever, you know, you can to their offices, because here's what really happens with Congress, okay? If you think about it, when you send an email or if you call your congressperson or your senator, you're not going to get the congressperson, okay? You're going to get a staff member, which, for the most part, is kind of sort of one of your neighbors. I mean, maybe not if you're calling Washington, D.C., but if you're calling the local office, I mean, the person who's picking up the phone or the person who's, you know, checking emails, they're one of your neighbors, okay? They are just as out of touch about this as anybody. And the experience the last go-round was that the staff had no idea. But if you could imagine yourself in that position, and I'll get to your question about the media too as well. If you're a staff member for a congressperson and your job is to check the voicemail messages that came in overnight, and every night, every morning when you get there, it's full, and everybody's saying, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to check this out, you got to go here, you got to look at this, you know, it's all the same thing. They're going to go to their supervisor, and they're going to go, something's going on. What the heck is going on? We have to tell the congressperson, because that's our job, to let him know that something's going on. And so it's not when one person makes a phone call, it disappears into Never Never Land. Same thing with the media. Okay, they get one email, yeah, whatever. They get 20. On the week before the World Health Assembly on May, so it was like May 13th, it was actually Friday the 13th in May, we found out that the Office of Global Affairs in the Health and Human Services Department, on Friday the 6th, they put up something on their website and they said, we're going to have a public comment period on the 13th. And they said the deadline was the 6th. So they put it up, and the same day was the deadline was done. Okay? And then we bitched about it, and then they put it back up again. And so we were able to get them to open it up for 24 hours. Mm-hmm. They got 25,000 emails overnight. Okay? Now, if you've ever gotten a bunch of emails when you wake up in the morning, you're like, oh, what a pain in the ass this is, okay? Because somewhere in there, there's something that's important. But there's all this other crap, okay? So when you do that to your congressperson, their staff has that burden. But when it keeps coming and it keeps coming and it keeps coming, the congressman learns about it or the senator learns about it. Same thing happens with a research assistant or whatever it might be with the media, you know, production assistant, whatever it might be, when it gets hit over and over and over and over and over, they go, what in the heck is going on here, right? And so what has worked for me, and I'll do it right here, and it's right here on the page, every time I've ever done anything on video, I give my phone number. And the first time I did that on a couple of the shows, they're like, what are you doing, right? Are you... And it's wonderful. I mean, the phone calls I get from people that are just the salt of the earth, the only people who ever call me are people who give a crap, right? And it's like, oh, what do you want to talk? Oh, and I learn something every day. And so by all means, tell your congressperson to call me. Call the media and tell them to call me. You know, go to the website. But in terms of alternative media, what I have found is it's getting to be almost as bad as mainstream. I mean, there are clearly are exceptions, but I was on a phone call this week, and the woman, we were talking, and I said something, and she went ballistic. And she's like, oh, you're the only other person I've ever heard say that. She goes, I've been saying that all, you know, forever. And what I said was, these alternative media people, half of them on their show, they're like, well, today CNN said this. And MSNBC said that. and the Washington Post and the New York Times. It's like, could you have some real people on your show to give like a real, you know, information? They're just regurgitating the narrative. They've become, you know, promoters. And yeah, they talk the story negatively, right? So they present themselves as being on the right side of the story, but they're still shoving the narrative. They're not actually...
My alternative media doesn't do that at all.
There are exceptions, but many of them have just, you know, unless you know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody, you can't get through to them, you know. But by all means, you know, if any of the information that I bring is of worth and value,
I can
let them know.
I can get you on a couple radio shows.
Bring it on anytime.
Would you go on them?
24/7. This is.
Would you go on a couple radio shows?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I'll set it up.
That'd be a blessing. Thank you.
Hi, I'm John.
Hey.
Most everybody knows me here. I've spoken here last year. And I like to hold my public servants accountable, but I'm the only one that I know of openly who talks about this one subject. They know what it is. It's the oath of office. In California, they have to take an oath to do two things, support and defend the Constitution for the United States of America. And they have to qualify, and they don't qualify. They are nothing more than usurpers, intruders, and perjurers. And I've caught them a few here before next door, and they didn't like that. That's partly why they had I had some trouble with them today. But the big thing is to hold them accountable. I don't know of anything else that's more important, or because if they have to take an oath to support the Constitution, whatever their agenda is, they have to have a foundation, and that has to be the Constitution.
Hang out, because I might want to ask you something.
You're going to ask me? Okay, good.
Sure. Arguably, delegates to the World Health Organization who are purporting to represent the United States have to be authorized through the Office of the Legal Advisor of the Secretary of State. You can't just go and negotiate an international treaty on behalf of the United States. You have to have a letter, a delegation of authority letter from the Secretary of State to be able to negotiate, and they have to define the scope of the negotiations. Now, if someone was to be negotiating on the behalf of the United States without that authority, that's a crime.
Right.
Now, if you were to report that crime to your congressperson, and your congressperson did not report it to the president, that's another crime called misprision of treason. It's a weird word.
Yeah, there's also misprison of Yeah, it's Title 18, Section 4, misprision of felony.
Okay. And thank you. And then that congressperson is clearly not defending the Constitution against treasonous activity on behalf of the delegates to the WHO. And if they remain silent, this is one of the ones where silence is a crime. So if you want to entrap your congressperson,
right,
inform them about possible treason being committed,
right,
and demand that they adhere to their oath.
Right.
They have to go public with it. They have to tell a judge, I forget what the list is, a judge, the president, a couple of other authorities. If they remain silent, you know, basically, if you know about treason and you don't say anything,
right,
then you're part of the treason.
That's right.
Right. So
exactly.
That's one way that our Congress people, if we inform them and then they remain silent, their silence is actually treason.
Right.
You certainly could take it to that step, okay? You could do it in public. You can, you know, nowadays everything's e-signature and all that sort of stuff. The reality of it, though, is just the mention of that phrase, most people go, what in the hell are you talking about, right? And it starts a conversation. And then somebody gets better educated, somebody gets informed, and you're talking about something that they had no idea was even going on, because most people have no idea that any of this is happening.
Yeah, Title 18, Section 4 says, whoever is cognizant of the commission of a felony and does not report the same to some judge or other person in civil or military authority under the United States shall be fined under this or imprisoned under this, or both fined and imprisoned. And there was that one man years ago whose brother-in-law sent that white powder, I forget what it was called.
Anthrax.
Anthrax. And he had the obligation to report that, and they prosecuted him under that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a thing.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You should run for office since you know the Constitution and the
title. Last thing in the world I'm going to be. But thank you, but no.
I passed the best test.
Thank you, but no, thank you.
Arrest everybody in Congress.
Yeah, really.
Hi, James. Thanks for speaking here today.
Sure.
Great hearing you. So you mentioned this one senator that, I guess, from the state of California, that is... Which senator is this?
It's Feinstein. It's Feinstein.
Feinstein. Oh, okay. Does she still have a brain? Never mind. But, I mean, don't congresspersons and senators have a right of decision? What I mean by that is that they can take under consideration everything that we all send them and all the suggestions that we the people give, but then go ahead and make their own decision anyway of how they're going to vote or support something?
They have that freedom, and you know, I'd throw it back on all of us, quite frankly. And you know, let me incriminate myself. All right, back in 1986 when they passed the Childhood Vaccine Act, where they took away or they gave protection from liability, I was brain dead. I had no idea. I wasn't paying attention. I didn't know that happened. I didn't say anything. Okay. 2005, the PrEP Act, same thing. They wedged in there that pharmaceutical companies can't be sued for damages. I wasn't paying attention. I didn't say anything. I'm sure there were people at the time who were, you know, trying to rip into it and get it to stop. That's my bad. Okay. And so what I hear all the time, and I experienced it a couple of months ago where I was having these kinds of conversations about what the WHO was doing and what Biden was doing, a lot of people are like, oh, there's nothing you can do. It's, you know, foregone conclusion. If they want it to happen, it's going to happen. And, you know, maybe I was just dumb and naive, but I said, well, I know about this. I have to say something, okay? And so not quite at the level of misprision of treason, right? But if you know something and you don't say anything, that's bad on you, all right? If you know something and you say something and you try to get other people to say something and you fail, okay, that's unfortunate, but that's way better than just sitting on your can and doing nothing, okay? But amazingly, sometimes you say something and enough people are behind you in saying that. I don't remember the number, but my understanding, and I know a person who was very much involved in it, one of the pieces of legislation in the California Assembly, I think it was the one where children would not need parental approval to get a vaccine or whatever in school, it got canned. Okay? Well, thank God, right? But that's not just because it just sort of kind of happened. It's because a lot of people got up off their butt and said, oh, hell no. Right? And at some point, that pressure has enough of an impact that things do go in the right direction. You know? But then then they're going to have another one, so we've got to be back at it.
Maybe you can answer this question, maybe not. I'm going to throw it at you anyway. About 15 years ago, I was involved with a group called We Are Change Los Angeles, and one of our members actually went to speaking engagement that Joe Biden was giving in Los Angeles. And Jeremy was his name. And he had in his hand a report from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth that exposed the fact that the towers were brought down by explosives and not by planes and fire. So Jeremy, on video, actually handed that report to Joe Biden and told him what it was. But the slippery bastard handed it back to Jeremy, and instead of going like this and letting Joe keep it, Jeremy accepted it back. He regrets that decision. But because that's on video, can there still be an argument made for misprision of treason? Because he had it in his hand, but he did hand it back. So probably not, but maybe you can speak to that.
He was told.
Yeah.
Right. He was told what the report was that he was giving him, and this is on video, and he took it, he listened for a moment, and then he kind of distracted and handed it back. And Jeremy, unfortunately, took it back.
The answer that comes to mind, not that I'm in any way, shape, or form an expert, okay, is the proper thing to have done would to have had some type of agency that serves papers, okay? Do it properly, okay? Costs a little bit of money. It's not easy to do, especially with, you know, public figures and all that sort of stuff. There's a process by which you serve papers, and once they're served, then you don't have that question, okay? And so not a convenient answer. Yeah, okay, bad on him for doing that. Arguably, just handing him that document would mean he had that document. All of that information is, you know, at this point in time, anybody who even remotely is confused about what happened on that event, you know, it makes you wonder, and, you know, we're getting into psychological territory of what in the world is going on here. To even be able to still, you know, has there been anyone really in public office who has come clean and honest about that? I think they're all, I don't think there's one elected official that I know of that I could name who has spoken truth about that. They're all still living a lie. It's astonishing. They, you know, that applies. How in the world could they not know? I mean, this isn't a whole lot different. You want to light a fire and see if this thing crumbles? And all of the brickwork turns to dust?
Right.
Like the concrete and the aluminum, you know, it just disappears. And, you know, I when I got out of college, I didn't want to be a computer geek, so I worked carpentry for 14 years. I've torn buildings down, okay? They don't just fall down. Okay, you know, it takes a little something to knock off some steel beams. The absurdity only speaks to the average American's lack of any concept of engineering. Anybody who's ever built anything or worked with any kind of machinery, I mean, looks at that and just goes, you gotta be kidding me. How could you be that ignorant of reality, just physical reality, okay? You know, people probably never touched a steel beam. You know, you touch one steel beam, stand it up, and try to imagine how it just dissolves. That's a new kind of reality. So, anyway.
Hi, my name is Ben.
Hey, Ben.
And to second what you're saying, we're living in that sort of dissociation of reality, you know, now, obviously, for crying out loud. Zinc, obviously, has been an inhibitor of, you know, what they call viruses for a while. They sell it on the CVS or Walgreens. It shortened everybody's cold for at least, you know, by 2 or 3 days, maybe, you know,
sure,
over the counter. And then all of a sudden, oh, my God, you know. So just want to say that. And then
if I may add a zinc,
yes,
story,
mm-hmm,
zinc's right smack in the middle of insulin.
Of what?
Of insulin.
Oh,
so anybody's got diabetic problems, make sure you got your zinc.
Oh.
You know, it's a million. Zinc does a million things, and if you're deficient, you know, pick your problem.
Can you elaborate on that? It's kind of lost on me a little.
You know, insulin, the hormone insulin to manage sugar.
Yeah.
You know, this is different but similar. Most people know iron is part of hemoglobin. Okay.
Yeah.
Zinc is very much associated with insulin.
Okay.
And if you're short on zinc, insulin's not going to be functioning properly. You're going to have sugar problems.
Ah, okay, gotcha. So people need to make sure your zinc levels are
right.
Okay. That makes sense. All right, cool. Good to know. So with all your bona fides, I was looking on your Substack, number one. How do you do a Substack?
And number two, my phone number's on the thing. Call me, I'll walk you through it.
All right, cool. And number two,
it's free. You sign up, you do a little bit of stuff, and
yeah, they said that you should run for office. Sounds like you should. You have a Substack, and it looks pretty darn good compared to some of the other websites of us angry neighbors. So I mean, you're already ahead of the curve.
I prefer shooting arrows, not having them shot at me. So,
well, no, of course. I hear you. I mean, a lot of them they stepped up. I mean,
yeah, sure.
They have no really place like in my they did because they care about the country, but you know, we want people that actually are honed, seasoned, I would say, fighters like yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah, run for office.
Oh, yeah. So I think, well, I'm pretty loud, so I don't think I need to be like this close to the speaker, feel free to correct me if I do need to. Sorry. So I was late. I was late. So how do you personally go about exposing misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation?
Well, step number one is to just get the evidence, okay? A couple of months ago when I started doing what I'm doing on this particular topic that we're talking about today, I found a document that was a government document, went researching, found a couple more. One of them was an 84-page document that the CDC published in the Federal Register on, let everybody think about this date, January 19th, 2017. That was the last full day of the Obama administration before Trump was inaugurated the next day. And they changed a lot of words, the definition of words. They changed the definition of a public health emergency. They changed the definition of what an invasive test was, which made it okay to stick something up your nose. They changed a handful of other things. And so I had the evidence. So I didn't care what anybody said. All I was doing was saying, look at this. Okay? Anything anybody said about the evidence is hearsay. I heard somebody say, right? All I do is point to documents that are evidence, and I don't ever even deal with mis, dis, or malinformation because it's evidence. And if you just think about it, when you're talking to people in general, the conversation will generally be, oh, you know, my friend said this, and my friend said that, and I saw this over there. Hearsay, 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 right? When somebody says, here's the document, you should read it, okay? How is that ever going to be mis, dis, or malinformation? So the government is the best at saying things. Now, they try to present documents that are misinformation. They make it harder, okay? And the latest one, I think it's still live, one of the bills that's in the assembly starts off by saying the COVID-19 vaccines are safe and effective. They've been shown, they've been shown and proven to be safe and effective. And I scratch my head and I go, well, can you show me where in the law the word safe is defined?
That's right.
Can you show me where the word effective is defined? Going back a couple of months when they were interrogating, really, the woman who is now in the Supreme Court, and they said, could you define a woman?
Oh, yeah.
I wish I could have been whispering in her ear, and what I would have said was, well, Senator, if I was going to be a Supreme Court justice and a case came to where I needed to interpret, in regards to the case, the definition of a woman, I would be stumped because the Senate hasn't ever passed a law that defines what a woman is in the law. So the moment you guys get around to doing your job, I'll be able to answer that question.
Wow.
Okay? Because, they never thought that they would need to define the word woman, right? But they haven't defined case, they haven't defined pandemic, they haven't defined vaccine, they haven't defined safe and effective, blah, 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 blah. And I forget what your original question was. How do you find misinformation and disinformation? It's freaking everywhere, right? And so, you know, truth, sometimes it depends on perspective, okay? You look at me from one direction, I look like I have a head of hair. You look from another direction, look like I have a big forehead. It all depends on your perspective, okay? The statistics that they've thrown around through these last 3 years are just, from the get-go, complete garbage, right? And so we're living in an age where everything is, if not way over the line being a lie, it's right on the edge of being fudged to the point where you can't make any sense of it. And honestly, a lot of times I go on instinct. You know, if I get a gut feeling and I go digging for something, I know that if I dig hard enough, I'll find the evidence. But what most people do is they look at the surface and they go, oh, you know, I trust, don't trust me. Go dig, right? You know, find it. There are some people that you tend to trust because they're pretty consistent. They give you good information. But belief will get you in trouble. If you believe enough to dig to get to the evidence, you can actually help. Okay, I had somebody this morning text me, oh, did you know about this? I'm like, oh, thank you. Right? Let me go dig down there and see what that is. So the problem is nobody has time to do the digging. And so we're left to believe what somebody said. And, you know, it's like this story. You know, if we did that whole telephone thing around the room, I told somebody something. By the time it came back to me, it's totally different. So it's a big, wide open question. But the assumption should be everything you hear is bullshit, unless it resonates, and then you dig down a little bit more and you go, yeah, that sounded right, it felt right, and I got some evidence and some more evidence and some more evidence. But I know a lot of people who they want to believe stuff, but the evidence is to the contrary. And sometimes it's people who are on our side, right? You know, sometimes there's stuff, but you know, the stuff that you want to believe is actually not true. And you got to be willing to challenge it. That's what the scientific method is. You're honest with yourself, and you ask yourself, all right, what if I was wrong? What if that guy was right? And so one way to do it, and I'll turn this around in a very different way, fake information about masks, okay? I don't see any. Okay, nobody's wearing a mask. If you see somebody wearing a mask, you can go up to them and go, why are you doing that, you big dummy? It's 110 degrees. You know, it's going to make you sicker. Or instead of trying to push facts on them, which they obviously don't want to hear, ask them, why did you choose that mask?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that the best mask?
No, it's not.
Okay. You know, I've worked construction, and you can go to Home Depot, and they have N100 masks. Okay. You can get yourself a nice carbon filter respirator, and you can do spray paint, okay? Or, you know, if you're worried about a virus, did you ever see any of the movies with the level 4 biolabs, and they got the bubble suit and the air pack and the filter, and then when they leave work, they go into the decontamination center, and they spray the outside, because as soon as you take that mask and you touch the outside, you know, ask them, you know, why did you get the Pfizer and not the Moderna? You know, the Moderna's got 100 micrograms and Pfizer's only got 30. You only got a third as much poison as you could have gotten. Okay. So if you turn it around, the people who are pushing the misinformation don't actually have facts. And when you ask them for their facts, it falls apart. I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Sure.
A way to put a stop to that is make them put an affidavit behind it.
Yeah, yeah, and throw a little liability on top of it.
Well, it says under penalty of perjury, that's liability.
That would be, oh, you know who I wish would be able to operate under penalty of perjury is press secretaries around the country. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, I work for a geologist part-time, and he says one of the best things that Congress could do in particular would be to pass a law that if anybody tells a lie, it's a felony. It has never been adjudicated. I don't know if you know this. It's never been adjudicated that there isn't that there even is a pandemic?
There's no definition of a pandemic. The way it legally is defined, and this is actually number two on the Declaration of Demands, since you raised it. We demand that Congress enact legislation providing Congress with the same authority as found in Title 50 U.S. Code, Section 1622, the public health emergency declared by the Secretary of Health and Human Services has no way to be shut off. The law is flawed. Unlike the national emergency declared by the President, which we talked about at the beginning, that Congress is obligated to vote on, when Javier Becerra, not originally, originally it was Trump's Secretary of Health and Human Services, but when he keeps renewing for 90 days the public health emergency, the reason he's doing it is all of the money that flows through the CARES Act is tied to there being a state of emergency. Yeah. The reason why the state of emergency keeps being renewed every 90 days is there's no way in the law for it to be shut off by we the people, which is a major flaw. That definitely needs to be changed. And the money flows like better than water.
Well, actually, there's a provision in the Declaration of Independence. But whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. Instituting new government, laying its foundation on such principles, and organizing its powers in such form shall seem to them most likely to affect their safety and happiness. And we are right there, and that is something that can be done, and I know how to do it.
Can I join your team?
What's the word inside of the word believe?
Lie.
There, right.
That's what was the? There's another one with that. I'll think about it in a moment.
Thanks, James. I'm sure. Mick. Just real quick, and I'll ask my question. You mentioned public officials regarding 9/11. You probably remember Cynthia McKinney.
Sure.
Congresswoman, she did question
one exemption. Yeah, one exception.
She's only one, right? That I know of, and she did question the war games that right. day, right on Congress on the congressional floor. They kind of gave her an excuse, but of course, you know, they can always lie, right?
Right.
And then Donald Trump did say either the day or that week of 9/11, 2001, on CBS local news that he said, "I own a bunch of buildings. These didn't come down from planes. Those were demoed from bombs."
Yeah,
at least
granted,
he said that.
Granted, he never swung a hammer, but he was a builder. I mean, he saw some steel beams from time to time. I mean,
right. Well, yeah,
he
knows construction
you have to
in
know
detail.
Better.
I've heard him talk about construction. He knows it quite detail. Yeah, so at least he said something back then. But he didn't do much later. But anyway, so my question is the American Union. There's also the North American Union related to NAFTA. Maybe you're familiar with those. The John Birch Society has some in their new American magazine. Some good. Articles mm-hmm. on that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you've done much research on that. It's similar to your WHO efforts. So I was just wondering if you've looked into that, considered maybe writing about that, getting a similar effort to oppose that, like opposing NAFTA, which is kind of the precursor to the North American Union, which then eventually becomes the American Union, similar to the EU.
I'm a little more focused on things like the Pan American Health Organization. You know,
your health guy.
You
mainly.
Know what? Let me. Let me go off on a slight tangent with that because there are many people that have circled around the same issues that I'm talking about, and they typically start criticizing, and they'll say things like, oh, that's communist, those progressives, that socialist agenda. And, you know, last time I checked, there wasn't a whole lot of them starting communes in China. Okay, China does not. They did not take over and nationalize the means of production. Okay, they went full on fascist. Okay, fascism, as defined by Mussolini, was the cooperation between government and corporations. Okay, but there's another one that I had a good conversation with the person today, and he really had a very good handle on it. The word fascism is actually about a bundle of sticks that are tied together, okay? And if you think about that, that's the concept behind any organization, okay? You get a whole bunch of people together. If they give up their individuality and they work as a group, it can be much stronger, okay? But you lose your individuality.
Collectivism, basically. Yeah.
Collectivism. Now, arguably, if you can work together but keep your individuality, maybe you've got a worker-owned cooperative or something like that, we all want to work together and maintain our individuality. But what I see has happened, certainly in my lifetime, is there's a third leg on old-school fascism. And now it's frighteningly stable, because you get any kind of tripod, it's pretty stable. And the third leg are the non-government organizations, the foundations, the charities, the nonprofits, okay? The Planned Parenthood,
Gates
the
Foundation,
Moon, the Gates Foundation,
Rockefeller Foundation.
Okay. They have gobs and gobs of money, but yet we don't pay attention when our government takes our money and gives it to these foundations that then contract with corporations who do the bidding of the government. Frighteningly stable, okay? And they've replaced the checks and balances of the judicial and the Congress and the president. And what we're dealing, you know, I don't know if we're being recorded, it's going to be published, whatever. United States is fascist. Yep. Not Nazi, not white supremacist. No. Understand what fascism is. And it's none of us here. It's big government, big corporation, big foundation, nonprofit, whatever you want to call it,
right.
Beating up on the little people.
Right. So I'd say that the American Union EU model is just helps move along that fascism.
Just another organization that you know is
it removes our sovereignty.
Intergovernmental. In the list that the WHO published I think it was on the 24th. They had a list of, I always forget the name. They have a list of the organizations that they think, relevant stakeholders is the phrase I'm looking for, okay? All of the different foundations, right? One of them is the Ethiopian Airlines, which I'm like, the World Health. But the whole point of it is one of the categories that they have are observers, okay? And these are nations that are not members. I think Palestine, the Vatican, they're not members, they're observers. They have diplomatic immunity, right? At that level is Gavi, which is a vaccine initiative. Their territory in Geneva, I have been told, I haven't vetted it, the people that work there have diplomatic immunity. It's diplomatically secure space. And you just scratch your head, how do foundations become on a par with government? Okay, exactly. And so I'm not a relevant stakeholder because I haven't donated millions of dollars, and I'm guessing neither are you. And so, you know, we don't get a seat at the table. And right. That's what's really going on. Government realizes, at least in the United States, every now and then they do bump up against the Constitution. They do bump against a Supreme Court ruling. But they've figured out, well, we can just tell Facebook to censor them. Or we can just give money to this organization, and then they can give it to this corporation, and government can get done what government wants done with the help of their partners. And it disgusts me. They call all these organizations civil society. Okay? And so here's how you know that you're dealing with fascism. They've sugarcoated it, and they don't say it's fascism. They say it's a public-private partnership. So if you hear PPP, realize you're dealing with a fascist group of government corporations. And
what's the group you said, Pan-American Health? What's that called again?
They call it PAHO, Pan-American Health Organization. It's like the World Health Organization's stepchild for the Americas.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you might look into the American Union, because they affect health as well, like what you can import.
Exactly.
That affects health, environmental laws, you know, reduces our sovereignty. We have to appoint, you know, we have to follow these rules set by business people on a committee that are unelected, basically.
Reminded me of something that I was a bit involved in a number of years ago, TPP,
yeah.
And that's not the toilet paper problem, okay? That's the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Big secret, hidden, nobody talked about it. And just at the last minute, somebody got a hold of it. They wouldn't even the Congress people who were talking about it had to go into, I think they call it a spiff, you know, a secure room. They couldn't take photos. They couldn't do anything. Somehow somebody leaked it out, and boom, it was dead because people heard about it.
People started reading it online. I think RT was people on RT
reading. Yep. And it was like, oh hell no, same idea. In the darkness, you know, in hiding, they'll try to sneak it through. But as soon as we get, you know, the word out, it falls apart.
Can kill those germs sometimes.
There you go. Yeah, exactly.
All right, it's my turn. Hey, thank you for coming, James. I really liked you when you last time you were here.
Cool. Yeah.
Down there.
Thanks for remembering.
Before you went to your overseas group for the, well, you went. I remember on Dell Bigtree, you know, they had that woman.
Chauvin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she mentioned you. She on the show. She said, "Well, James is, you know, the, like."
No, he actually asked me to be on, but I you know, she's more photogenic, so I said,
"Yeah, she's very beautiful, isn't
yeah,
she?"
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was great.
And brilliant too. And brilliant. She's she is an absolute warrior.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're doing what you do. Well, when you're talking about all the lies and bullshit and all the stuff that we get crammed down our throats and the scams and the scares, you know, the whole core of the COVID scam, which has really exposed the question of what is a virus and what's the proof that there is such a thing called a virus.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get into it, honestly, and look using the scientific method, which is, you know, you claim X can cause Y, you know, you got to say, well, does X exist?
Mm-hmm.
And if it does, then can it cause this symptoms you claim is Y, a disease? And they can't do either one. They've never found a virus. They claim they do. They assume it is, but they haven't. And that's what's interesting. And then there's no such thing as contagion. I mean, they can't prove. You know how they've shown contagion is by cutting up and mixing up and blending up untold substances and poisons and then injected it into the brains of rats and saying, see, we proved the rats got sick, you know, from this. And that's not a natural way. They can't find it in a natural person. They just got to do it outside the body and culturing systems and stuff. So once you get into that, you see it's another big lie. And then when there's no, if you come to the realization there is no such thing as a virus, it's an assumption, then what the hell is a vaccine for? And why would you mask if for something that's not there? And why would you lock down? Why would you? All of it. It all falls away. There's and what would the WHO do? The WHO do. That sounds funny.
They do voodoo.
You know, they're all for protection from these outbreaks of these pathogenic, scary, you know. But it's when there's nothing there, it's just a patsy, a boogeyman that they can control you with. You know, it's a psyop. So I recommend everybody really deeply try to understand it. Look at the facts. And the facts say there's nothing there. It's a myth.
There's no question there, but I'll answer it anyways.
No question.
There's no question. No, but I'll answer it anyways. Let me interject a question into that. Okay? I think I heard, maybe it was you, somebody mentioned Purnima Wag. Okay?
Yeah.
And I'm intimately connected with the folks who have, you know, been talking to her with all that stuff. Here's where my interest went, and I'd love to get people's minds thinking along these lines. Okay? I used to manage, that's why I know about zinc, okay? I used to manage a nutrition store, and I was the manager and the buyer, and so I would deal with salespeople, and I looked through thousands upon thousands of products. I got every sales pitch you could imagine. And some of the better companies would, I'll show my age, they would give us something that looked like a telephone book. Okay, people don't know what that is nowadays. But we would get a stack of documents where every batch that they made, they would send off to an independent lab. There's plenty of labs in LA, yeah. Right? And you get an independent analysis. If I was selling a 500 milligram vitamin C, and the lab report came back and said, well, there's only 300 in there, kick it out. Do it again, guys. You know, bad manufacturing.
Yeah.
I cannot find, and nobody has been able to produce, the quality assurance documentation of the batches. And this is gonna be backwards when I say it first, so bear with me, okay? I'm alleging that the vaccines are shortchanging people and they don't have adequate amounts of mRNA.
We found that out when they were diluting them at the place over here in LA.
Okay. But even the vials themselves, there are, and Purnima Wagh's scientist, I could not get her to give me her data. I'm still nagging her.
That's the problem with Purnima.
Yeah, understood. But here's the point. It's not about the viruses. It's not about the terrain and the argument about that. Where are the documents that the government has tested the products to say, I'll have a little bit of fun with you. I know it wouldn't be you. We're just playing around, okay?
Yeah.
Say you knew somebody who bought some Viagra because they thought they needed to use some Viagra. And they brought it home and they took it, and it just didn't seem to do anything. Just didn't seem to have the desired impact, okay? And they knew somebody who had a laboratory. They sent it off to be analyzed. And they go, oh, you know, the active ingredient in here, it's not in there. That'd be off the market in no time. Okay, where are the independent labs that have analyzed the Moderna and the Pfizer vials coming out of every batch that does it or does it not have in the right range the amount of mRNA encapsulated in a lipid nanoparticle that they were authorized to inject people with? I actually got a chance to speak with Reiner Fuhlmich, who's a lawyer, and I brought up the point because this is what his specialty is, and doctors just don't get it. It's not about harm. It's not about vaccine side effects. This is a product contamination and product misbranding issue. It should be taken off the market like that because it doesn't have documentation that the promised authorized active ingredient is actually in there. That raises another question. If there isn't any mRNA in there, what are they really doing?
Right. What's in it?
I don't know if anybody has seen. Look up Stu Peters, and there's a gentleman from Ecuador. He is a electronics or electrical engineer. He's an electrical engineer, so he understands circuitry. And the tests that he did, he's in Ecuador. I don't know him, but I know people who know him. He did an experiment where he was analyzing the vials and their effect on blood and all that stuff. And what he found was that if he was way out in the middle of nowhere, it didn't look like there was any problem. But if he was analyzing them where there was a 5G signal, the combination of the vaccine ingredients and the electromagnetic frequencies caused the particulate matter in there to self-organize into circuitry. And you just go, wait a minute.
Yeah, that's scary.
Wait a minute. And what Purnima is saying is all the injections are the same.
Yeah,
it's all about the graphene oxide and the heavy metals and the particulates and the nanoparticles.
Graphene oxide.
This is not necessarily what people think it is. It may very well be that some of them do have mRNA and they do get into your DNA, but the reality of it is nobody really knows.
No.
Nobody really knows.
It's all an experiment.
Yeah.
Okay, in keeping with our timeline, we have time for one more, and Nastasha was next in line, so come up. Thanks. Last one.
Cool.
Hi. In regards to the executive orders, a lot of people don't realize that it doesn't apply to them, right? It applies maybe within the executive office.
Nobody knows
and
that.
And even then, it doesn't
Hey, I'm the executive, and I'm telling you what to do. It doesn't go outside of the building. Yeah.
And so, and even then, if it's unlawful, unconstitutional, it doesn't even apply within that little circle.
Right.
So too many people have, and I'm going to be asking my question.
Sure, no, take your time.
But too many people don't understand how the criminal organization called our government works and doesn't work, or how it's supposed to work and their place in it. So there's a lot of self-education that needs to be done. Because a lot of people just could have turned around and said, screw you, and we're not following, you know, unlawful orders, so that you have no authority over. So my question is, you have the executive order at the federal level that is really mute. The state governors have a skin in the game to go along with it. In the state of California, and I have to go back, it's been a long while since I've read it, since the beginning of this mania, but the state of California actually does have, I think it's a 90-day limitation on an emergency.
The assembly is supposed to speak up. And
It's supposed to end in 90 days, or no, 60 days, or sooner. And that only applies to police officers, firemen, medical personnel. Again, not to you or me.
Right.
Even if there was a real pandemic or a nuclear war coming our way, a bomb, nobody can impede your right to movement. So my question is, how would you recommend discern to get the executive order that's never been overturned or ended? Trump didn't end it when he left office.
Right.
At the state level, if that emergency is done and over, which federal judges have or state judges have sought to have Gavin comply, that would override that federal emergency, because the state is independent of the federal government. If you go back to the initial idea of state,
is that was a statement? But is that the question? Is it?
Yeah.
Is
how
it,
would you it, recommend in regards to?
Let's talk about it more, okay? But let me try to answer it. There's a pretty decent website called Ballotpedia, okay, and they have a page dedicated to states of emergency, okay. Last time I checked, 29 states have ended. 21 are still, and we're one of them, okay? Some of them, you know, their legislature said no more. Some of them have been court cases. Some of them have just been, you know, governors decided to end it. I remember reading at the very beginning when they first declared it, I went and I looked, and I'm like, I could have sworn it was 7 days that the assembly had to, but, you know, the problem here is the assembly is just cookie cutter. Right, whatever,
right.
You know.
Right.
And so that's really the problem, is when you get a really out-of-balance legislature, you don't have the check and the balance, okay?
Right.
And all three parts of government are all, you know, screwing us.
Right.
I think your question, though, is I'm going to have a not good answer. What motivates a lot of local governments is the flow of money.
Right. No,
it's
right.
Not so much the emergency declaration.
Oh, I know. It's the money.
It's,
yeah,
right. They see that a lot in school boards. Oh, you got to do the masks and the vaccines because, oh, we got, you know, $200 billion sitting there. Until people figure that out.
Yeah. LASD got $15
right.
billion in one
and
year.
So pretty much any state governor, you know, has the power to declare an emergency, and rightfully so. There's a fire, there's an earthquake, there's a flood, a tornado, a hurricane, tsunami, whatever, okay? But the check is supposed to be 7 days, 30 days, whatever. Hey, you know, where's your report? What's going on? Well, all the data has been cooked, and so the reports always look real good, and you got the rubber stamp legislature. So it's not so much the case that the national emergency governs would override or wipe out the state, because states can have their emergencies all they want.
Right.
Okay. It's really that, and I have a whole article on it. I'll point it out to you. I forget what the name of the group was. There's like 136 legal powers that the president kicks in when they have a national emergency.
Right.
And we're currently living under 42 separate national emergencies. Okay? I'm still waiting for the moneypox one. Didn't happen, right? They got the public health emergency part of it. And so, did I answer your question?
Well,
I think I did.
Yeah,
I'll be happy to talk. I'm fascinated with the topic, and I'd love to talk about it more.
It's sort of a, you know, I understand the state has its own power to end it, but for some reason, like here in California, it's just not happening. I understand the money part. You know, I called every local agency, the sheriff, the city hall, county, because they're supposed to be having weekly emergency meetings, and I was looking for those meeting minutes to confirm they don't exist.
Because all of us are at a heightened state of alert because it's such an emergency.
So I was just wondering because how you would answer that, because people tend to focus on the federal level and not on the state level. And the state level has the power.
The
like you
national,
said, there's already 23
the national emergency seems to be less of an issue. The public health emergency declared by the HHS is what's written in all of the legislation. That's the one that makes the money flow.
Right.
I'm sure there's money that flows with the national one. I think what it really comes down to, the answer is the emergency ends when we say that's it.
Exactly.
It's over.
Exactly.
And quite frankly, we have, but we haven't gotten organized enough to just go, look, right now, it's done. We're done with this bullshit.
Right.
It's hard to get all these cats organized.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think part of it, which I think you concur, is more people needing to educate themselves.
Yeah.
Way back, I wrote an editorial and submitted it to Orange County Register on opposing GATT.
Okay.
And we're dealing with GATT issues today.
Sure.
So, anyway, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much. One question?
Sure.
Yeah, you mentioned that you like people to call you.
Sure.
With your telephone number. Would you be willing to share that with us and, and our listeners who can't be here today?
It's 310-619-3055. You can call me. You can text me. You can use Signal, Telegram, WhatsApp. 310-619-3055. If you go to declarationofdemands.com or you go to stopthewho.com, my number's all there, so you can find it on the Internet as well.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much for coming.
All right.
Let's have a great hand here for James. Thank you, James.